Hi, it's Kate Brownfield from ADHDKidsCanThrive.com. Thank you for listening. My guest is April Rehrig. She's a veteran school psychologist and founder of Rise Educational Advocacy and Consulting. She joins me today to discuss and educate us all more about navigating the journey of school IEP and 504 plans for kids with ADHD. Please enjoy our conversation. Thank you, April, for being here.
I'm so excited to be here, Kate. Thank you for having good. Me.
I'm really looking forward to speaking with you. Okay, so let's kind of dig in, I think, from the very basics of what is the difference between a 504 and an IEP? Can you please clarify and clear this up for us?
Yes, Kate, that is such a great question. And I'm so glad that you asked it. I get my listeners asking me this question all the time. This is almost the number one question. And what I'm about to tell you is interesting because I was a school psych for 20 years. And even as a school psych and a teacher and a mom, I still got confused. So if I got confused and I had all this background, think about everybody else. So when it comes to an IEP and a 504 plan, what's kind of fascinating is that there's kind of these two parallels, if you think about it. So if you're a listener, close your eyes and think about how they're different in kind of two different categories, and then how do they intersect? Because actually a 504 and an IEP do intersect. And that is the most confusing part that people really struggle to understand. So both a 504 and an IEP involve what's called FAPE, Free Appropriate Public Education. So this means that in both these instances, schools are required to address these children's unique learning needs, whether it's an IEP or a 504. And it needs to be free and appropriate, it needs to be public, and it needs to be educated. So that's where they intersect. The other thing that your listeners need to know, and that gets really confusing, is you can actually have a 504 and an IEP at the same time. Most people do not. Most parents opt to get the awesome IEP because it's got a lot of backing and a lot more supports in place. But technically, you can have both. And most people will say no, but it's actually not the case. So let's talk about how they're different. And there's kind of different areas that we should touch on so that your listeners feel like they're comfortable kind of going back and forth between each one. When it comes to an IEP, basically, an IEP involves specialized academic instruction. It's more than services. It has to do with getting those supports in class. And then when it comes to a 504 plan, it has to do more with removing barriers and providing access. So access to the classroom, access to extended time, whatever type of support that you're looking for, that's the access that you're listening to. And say with that.
Okay. So let's take a child with ADHD. Let's say they have severe ADHD, but they don't have a learning disability. Well, really ADHD can interfere with learning, right? So how does a parent navigate which one they need?
This is a great question. So what's the difference and what's best, right? So when you think about not even just a child with ADHD, just a child with either a suspected or an actual disability, because you can get a 504 without diagnosis. So if they have a suspected disability, you need to think about what do they need most, right? What's going to work on strengthening their skills? And that's what it's really about here. It's not necessarily just remediating the deficits. It's how are we going to capitalize on what the child can actually do. And that's the whole purpose of an education plan, whether it's an IEP or a 504. It's not just looking at the deficits. How are we going to capitalize on what they can do and how are we going to get them to where they need to go? So with an IEP, if the child needs services, it doesn't necessarily mean pullout, but it could mean that they need remediated skills. So maybe they need some supports with reading, some supports with tasks completion, or they're failing with their grades. And so without specialized academic instruction, they can't access the curriculum. then that might be a case for an IEP. If a child needs access, meaning they need some extended time, maybe they need accommodations or modifications, which you can get with a 504 plan, and they're getting either C's or better, or with those supports, they can access the curriculum, then a 504 might be more appropriate. Now, in the retrospect, when you're thinking about moving to college, you can either have an IEP or a 504 plan. And then when you apply to college, apply for disability supports. It's not one is better than the other. But to kind of scale it back, you really need to decide for your child, what type of support is better? Do we need services? Do we need direct instruction? Do we need goals and really robust support? Or do we just need access? Do we just need equity to whether it's getting the right support on the playground, or maybe being able to ride the bus, or you're getting suspended all the time? You want protections in place, which you can get with a 504 plan. So I hope that clarifies that for your listeners a little better.
Yeah, that's great. And then you just hinted that you don't have to have a formal diagnosis to get a 504. So no. I do hear, like, especially with the littles, which what I would say like kindergarten and first grade, those kids are acting, a child may be acting out. And parents will say that, well, one particular case, he was getting in school suspension because he hadn't been formally diagnosed yet. And so the poor mom was running around trying to get him diagnosed so he wouldn't get these like in-school suspensions for his behavior. So
that's a really good point you brought up, Kate. And I saw this, I'll tell you a story really quickly because I saw this every day as a school psych. You touched on something called informal suspensions. And I think we should talk about it with our listeners because it is out there and it happens all the time. So let's say your child is in the classroom and they're like, we're sending you to the office, right? You need to sit it out in the office, or your parents get a call, come pick up your child. That's actually a discipline and that's a removal. So an informal removal from the classroom, whether it's to the office or being sent home early, that is a suspension and that counts under federal law as being a removal. And so if your parent is getting called every day, come pick up your child. If your parent is getting called every day, they're sitting in the office all day, that is part of their educational record. And that's an informal removal. And if there's more than 10 of those a year, whether it's consecutive every day or a few here, a few there, that means the school is mandated to evaluate the child, whether for an IEP or a 504 plan. So if this is happening to you and you're a parent, here's what you can do really quick that totally changes everything. When you get a call from the school, come pick up your child. You could say, oh, are they being suspended? No, but we need you to pick up the child. Oh, okay. Can you put that in writing? And can you write me an email saying why my child's being suspended? Oh, no, we just want you to pick up the child. Oh, so they're not being suspended. No. Oh, okay. Well, they're going to stay at school. I'll be there at 3 o'clock to pick them up. That can be a huge game changer. You don't have to pick up your child. I know it seems scary, but you don't, unless they're being formally suspended. That's an informal removal, which is totally against the law. They have to do it formally through a suspension.
Okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. And then, the school doesn't really want to be suspending them. Is that what's happening? They just don't want to deal with the child. Okay.
Correct. And that when this happens, so many families, you get the call and what's your thinking? I got to go pick up my child. Like, I am so embarrassed. This is awful.
Yeah.
And then come to find out if the child is not being formally suspended, they can't ask you to pick up the child. Now, if your child is hurt, if they're injured, if there's a formal suspension, absolutely go pick up your child. But if they're having a meltdown, if they're saying they don't want to do it, if they're putting their head down, if they're feeling tired, you don't legally have to pick them up from school. You can write the email and say, can we please have a meeting? Can you please send me an email exactly letting me know what happened? And that's going to give you that documentation that you desperately want. So if you want a 504 or an IEP, there you have it with the email instead of, oh, well, we don't have it on record. Oh, we didn't know that your child was sent home 20 times. That's a big deal. Plus, mom, you got to go to work or you got to work with your other children. Like, it's huge.
Yeah. Okay. So get it in writing, everything. Mm-hmm. Always mm-hmm. in writing. Okay. And I think we touched a little bit about like how a child would benefit in school from having a 504 IEP. I mean, we just kind of really talked about that. Do you have anything else?
So when a lot of times parents, and this happened to me all the time as a psych and a teacher, is we parents get told, you don't want a 504, you don't want an IEP. That's going to stigmatize them, or that's going to follow them for life, or they're going to know they have it. I want your parents to think about this instead. What can I put into place to protect my child? What can I put into place to make it so that my child won't be frustrated or angry or have meltdowns at home? Having that perspective will be a game changer in understanding how these supports can benefit, can be accessible, and really highlight and capitalize on your child's strengths by having these protections in place. And the only way to get those protections is to ask for it.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. So let me give you a scenario though. For example, okay, and we're going to talk about ADHD kids for today. So when an ADHD kid's academic grades are good, should a parent proceed with getting a 504 or an IEP?
These are great questions to ask. So when I was a school psychologist for many years, especially at the high school, we had this happen all the time, Kate. And a parent would put in a referral and they would say, okay, for example, I would like an IEP. And in my early years as a school psychologist, I was told, oh, no, they can't get an IEP unless they get below a C. Or, oh, no, they can't get an IEP unless they get the right test score. And what I didn't know is that a child can have C's or better. A child can be in an academic advanced course like AP or honors and possibly qualify for an IEP. Grades are not the deciding factor. So when it comes to an IEP, if the child cannot access the curriculum, or for example, they're in AP classes and they're getting B's, but they have to spend 3 or 4 hours a night on homework, or they're having meltdowns. They need to take their medication. And without the medication, they're a disaster. Sure, they're in an AP course, but they need that specialized instruction. They need those accommodations. They need that academic support. So they should be evaluated for an IEP. So grades are not a deciding factor. Now, when it comes to a 504 plan, yes, it's the same thing. I had many students, especially when I worked at my last high school, who would be in AP or honors or getting B's and C's. But if they didn't have the 504 plan, they couldn't use the restroom frequently, or they couldn't be able to take a break, or they couldn't get double time on their standardized test scores. Or if they took the SAT or the ACT, they needed that double time so bad. And so having the 504 was a blessing. So academics, the bottom line, is not the deciding factor. Just because your child has good grades doesn't mean they shouldn't be evaluated for an IEP or a 504 plan.
Okay, very good information. Okay, so let's go to another scenario. So the next scenario would be a young, let's say teenage boy, ninth grade, who isn't doing his homework or turning it in, and he's not studying for his tests. So he's getting all Fs, Ds and Fs, right? He's failing in high school, but the school isn't really stepping up to accommodate him at this point. So what does a parent do in this instant to find the right resources for their child?
So I say this all the time, Kate, is that parents make the best advocates. Just because I'm a special education advocate does not mean I know your child. We know as parents when our kids are struggling. And when a child is failing school, the school is not identifying their needs. So the most powerful thing you can do as a parent is to put into writing, I would like a meeting. If your child has an IEP and they're struggling and you feel like, oh my gosh, we have to re-meet, we need to redo the plan, put into writing, I want a meeting. If your child doesn't have an IEP or a 504 plan, but you think they might need either, the most powerful thing you can do is to put into writing, I would like my child tested. I would like a special education evaluation, or I would like a 504 plan. And when you put that into writing, that mandates the school to respond, and they have to formally respond to you when you put it into writing. It also puts onto the record that you are saying, I am asking for help, school. What could you do about it? When you talk about it, you know, during a parent conference, when the principal calls you on the phone, or if you put it into an email, that's one thing. But if you put it into writing and you walk into the school, or you put it into an email and saying, hey, I would like my child evaluated, that actually triggers a timeline for an IEP and requires the school to respond.
Okay. All right. And then what if you're working with a special ed advocate who's advising you to let the child fail to try to trigger the school to do something in response? Like, how does a parent navigate that?
If I was a parent and I was in that parent's shoes, I would really think about, what's the end game here? Do I want my child to get help? Or do I want maybe a few extra dollars because they're going to sue? It's really about your child. If your child needs help, why would you wait? If your child is failing, how does that feel good to let them continue to fail? It doesn't feel good. Yeah. If you want the school to act and you want to do something about it, it is so much better and you feel better as a parent when you say, I would like a meeting or I would like a 504 plan, because you know your child best. And the more you do that quickly, the faster your child will get support. So if the ultimate goal as a parent is to get your child help, then waiting is not the answer. Waiting is the enemy. And we feel more guilty as parents. We get less sleep. And then our child continues to struggle. And we both know when it comes to middle school and high school, failing grades are like, I mean, it's a big deal. So the best thing you can do is ask for help. There's no shame. And it certainly helps you sleep better at night.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great advice, April. And I think that goes into my next question, which is, I hear a lot of parents will say they know their child has ADHD or showing signs of ADHD, but there's this like wait and see what happens, right, as their child goes along. And I think, just give me your advice for parents on what you see in this wait and see game and kind of the arc of what happens as the child goes through high school and then into college.
So when it comes to IEPs, I refer to the wait and see approach is called repeat see. If you think about, you're in a journey, right? And going, getting an IEP, even getting a 504 plan is a journey. Repeat see is where the parent comes to school is like, I'm really having a hard time. Can you help me? And the school says, let's wait and see. Yes. And so a few months go by, maybe a few years, and then you come back and you're like, hey, my child is still struggling. Yeah, we have interventions. We have two or two, whatever, but things aren't working well. Can we meet? And then you meet again. Oh, no, 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 no. Let's wait and see. And so it's this repeat, right? And I can tell you, Kate, from being a psych for so many years, I had so many children, especially boys with ADHD, where the parents had gone to student success team, student study team, formal meetings, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. Every time they were like, I'm struggling. Can you help me? And the school says, oh, okay, well, let's do this. Let's do that. The child didn't get better. The ADHD didn't go away.
Right.
So what I can tell you from wait and see is that when it comes to IEPs, there is no requirement that you have to get interventions first to do testing. That is a huge misnomer. So I want your listeners to really understand that if your child is struggling, you don't have to wait. You can put in your request tomorrow for your child to get an IEP. You can do the interventions. That's great, but you don't have to wait for the interventions to be done to request for the testing. So if your child is struggling, the best thing you can do is do the evaluation. And when it comes to an IEP, getting an evaluation is going to give the team more information So they're really going to understand what's happening. And then it gives you the peace of not mind to know, well, what are we going to do moving forward? If we're not evaluating or we're not even doing a 504 plan, how is that helpful? It's not. So asking for help is everything that belongs to you and is your right, and it can only help your child.
April, so can you share with us kind of your words of wisdom for parents who are trying to navigate all of this?
My biggest word of wisdom, Kate, has to do with going with your gut. And being a mom of three boys, I can definitely tell you that going with your gut is so important. And the reason why I want to bring it up to your listeners is that you know in your heart when your child is struggling. And so it might be that they're at a birthday party and your child is having a meltdown, or they don't get invited to birthday parties, or you're getting calls every day to pick up your child and you know they're struggling. And asking for help, there's no shame in that. And so when you ask the school for help, that is the most powerful thing you can do to actually do something about it instead of sitting there worrying and stressing about it. But also asking for help means something is going to change. And that first decision to want to do something and actually do it makes all the other decisions moving forward so much easier. It's just like trying on that dress that you're like, I don't know about that. But then when you put it on, you're like, oh, yeah, that's the best dress ever. I'm so glad I did it. And then the next time you go shopping, you feel more confident in putting on that dress again. So it's that first step. And if you can do that first step and ask for help and know how to get it, it will completely transform your advocacy.
Yeah. Okay. So April, how can people work with you? And do you work with people all over the United States?
That's a great question. Yes. So I do work virtually with everybody. And the reason why I work virtually is, number one, I can reach anybody in a different state, but also families are busy. And when you hire an in-person advocate, which is one of the services I provide, it makes it really hard because it has to be when you're available and who's this and how are they able to come? And I find that virtual services is a lot easier. So if parents want to work with me, I provide advocacy through guidance and coaching. So if you hire me as an advocate, I show you behind the scenes, because like I've been talking about is a lot of advocates will just kind of talk about, okay, here's what you need to do. I'm going to write you a letter. And that doesn't solve the issue. Parents know their child better than anyone else. So I train parents who want to work with me how to do it themselves, how to write their letter, how to ask for help, how to know what to ask for and how to get it. And then I provide do-it-yourself workshops. So if a parent is saying, I want to request testing, can you help me tomorrow? There's a workshop for that. If you need to understand reports, you have an eval coming up, there's a workshop for that. I try to make advocacy and support accessible and easy to use, whether you're a parent or a teacher or provider, because the only way we're going to get better is to work across the aisle.
Right. So you help the parents get their PhD in this really quickly.
Yeah, because
you don't have to have your PhD, but you do. It is a learned skill.
It's a learned skill. And just because I have a certification doesn't mean the parent doesn't know their child. They just need the tools and the strategies. And we all know when you get the tools and the strategies, just like you go to Home Depot and you get the right thing, it's a game changer. And so if you get those skills, you can do it. And goodness knows, parents want to advocate. They're just like, where do I start and how do I do it?
Yeah. Okay. And so I have one more question. So if you initiate with writing with the school, right, for help, does that automatically trigger that they have to kind of get you going or put the supports in place for your child?
That's
like, does the
question.
Parent get taken away? Kind of, do you get swept into the funnel of action and making things happen?
So when it comes to a special education evaluation, that's an IEP. When you put into writing, and so what I'm talking about putting into writing, it means you write a letter, you submit it to the school, either electronically or in person, that triggers a timeline. And that triggers a mandate through what's called prior written notice, where the school has to respond. Every state has different timelines. If you're a parent thinking about it, look up the state timeline. They have to respond. A 504 plan, there's no quote unquote formal response. However, if you put into writing that you want a 504 plan, both an IEP and a 504 plan have procedural safeguards. So here's my suggestion. If you're a parent and you're thinking about an IEP or a 504 plan, before you start, ask for your procedural safeguards. If you feel uncomfortable, you don't want people to know, go on your district website or go on your county website and look it up, because that will tell you everything you need to know before you start.
Hot tip by April. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Do you have anything else as we wrap up today?
No, just that it's been such a pleasure to speak to you, Kate. And I'm so glad that we touched on these really important topics about how to access a 504, how to access an IEP, and how to really highlight kids that have ADHD and to capitalize on their strengths instead of just saying, oh, I don't know what to do. Is that there's always going to be a solution and there's always going to be supports out there. You just have to ask.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you.
You're welcome.